Big 2024 in-state defensive line target Zadavian Sims out of Durant, Oklahoma, announcing his commitment come Saturday. Is this a harbinger of things positively or negatively up front to come for Oklahoma this Saturday? That plus a full NCAA tournament breakdown, softball style, with Chris Plank on tonight's episode of Locked On Sooners.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to Locked On Sooners. Josh Helmer here with you from 94.7 The Ref. I decided I owed John one because he filled in, batted cleanup last night for me, as you can tell, new digs moving in. Don't have the studio fully operational yet, but mark my words, before too awfully long, as soon as we next tape, I believe, we'll have things straightened out and have a true Locked On Sooners studio for you, with the desk and the backdrop and all of that thing complete. But thank you to John. I owed him one. So tonight, Locked On Sooners with Josh Helmer. John, of course, will rejoin us to talk about what will be a big commitment decision one way or the other for Oklahoma. Zadavian Sims set to announce, Durant defensive lineman, blue chipper, four-star defensive lineman everywhere you look, top 100, top 200 type player, depending on where you look at in the recruiting rankings that exist out there from ESPN, On3, 24/7 Sports, and Rivals. The early buzz here was Oklahoma, and the power brokers that be, the Parker Thunes, the Brandon Drums of the world, of Rivals with OU Insider, Josh McQuistion of Sooner Scoop with On3, they haven't wavered here yet. Some of the national voices, interestingly, in this final hour, a recruitment that most of the experts believe will come down to, though the finalists, the final five look like this for Zadavian Sims: Oklahoma, Oregon, Vanderbilt, TCU, and Michigan State. The wide-held belief is that this is a two-team race between Oklahoma and Oregon. And unfortunately, if you buy, though he's not been right every single time, and I'm looking no further than one Mr. DJ Hicks in the last recruiting cycle, Steve Wiltfong issuing a crystal ball prediction, 24/7 Sports crystal ball prediction for Oregon yesterday. Sam Spiegelman of On3 issuing an On3 prediction for Oregon yesterday. A couple of the Spartan tailgate riders, Justin Thind and Corey Robinson, they both jumped on the Michigan State train. And I believe there's another On3 rider that did as well in favor of Oregon. So some of the late momentum, the predictions are going the Ducks' way. The bottom line is this: one side, with the backdrop of this recruitment being, keep in mind, on last national signing day, what happened? Oklahoma pulled a big-time stunner over Oregon and got somebody that I think, John thinks, probably you think, right here listening or viewing on Locked On Sooners, that Peyton Bowen, a safety for Oklahoma signee in the last class, is going to be a big-time difference maker as soon as next season. So with that being the backdrop, that, remember, it was Peyton Bowen. We thought it was going to be Oklahoma, and then all of a sudden it was Oregon. But wait a second, those papers weren't signed. And in that final hour, Oklahoma wins that five-star recruitment for Peyton Bowen. With that being the backdrop, interesting that this comes down again to Oklahoma and Oregon here for Zadavian Sims. And oh, by the way, in this final hour of the recruitment, you've got the three big recruiting voices in Oklahoma media: Parker Thune, Brandon Drum, and Josh McQuistion, not budging yet in favor of Oregon. So that's going to be something to watch. Obviously, the commitment will come down on 24/7 Sports' YouTube page live, 3:45 p.m. on Saturday. So that's when we'll find out. For Oklahoma, does this commitment, is it the harbinger of things to come? Because you're coming on the heels of a class where we thought there were a couple of high-profile defensive line commits and eventual signees to be had. And Oklahoma, Oklahoma got theirs. They got PJ Adebare. They got a Derek LeBlanc. So it's not as though Oklahoma didn't get blue chip guys up front, but they didn't land Mr. Hicks, right? And so there's these five stars in this class, these blue chip prospects in this class that Oklahoma is linked and has crystal balls or on three predictions or rivals future casts in for, depending on which service you're looking at for all of these guys, these following names: David Stone, Williams Wanneri, Nigel Smith, Joseph Jonah Ajonye. Those are all still on the board, even if you swing and miss here come Saturday with Zadavian Sims. Will this, though, if it's a swing and a miss, will this start the dominoes to where this class in some ways reflects a little bit of the last cycle, where it seemed like at times maybe it was going to be this historic defensive line class, and then obviously a couple of late decisions, and really notably Hicks's late decision, prevented that from being the case? Or do you tend to be on the optimistic side that whether or not Oklahoma lands an in-state guy? We had our recruiting coordinator on just the other day, Brian Smith, with us, and he was pointing to the point that pointing to the fact that Zadavian Sims, an in-state kid out of Durant, this is someone that if you want to go beat Alabama, if you want to go beat Georgia, if you want to go beat Ohio State, on and on and on, this is someone that needs to wind up in the Crimson and Cream. I tend to find myself a little bit more of the optimistic nature, and I'm not closing the book until this decision is made. And even after a commitment is announced on Saturday with somebody like Zadavian Sims, who is a talented in-state prospect, it ain't over until the ink in December dries, or that fax comes in, or however you want to phrase it. So even if there's a commitment that's not Oklahoma, if it goes Oregon's direction, you don't close the book totally on this. And I wouldn't hit the panic button up front for Oklahoma. Again, defensively, along the defensive line, defensive tackle, edge rush for Oklahoma, because you've got David Stone out there. You've got Williams Wanneri out there. You've got Nigel Smith out there. Joseph Jonah Ajonye out there. Jaden Jackson. There's other names. You know, those would be the other big four, and then a Jaden Jackson and some of these other names to watch. It can still be a sensational defensive line class if you do not net the commitment from one Zadavian Sims. But this would be an initial, just based on recruiting rankings, this would be an initial cherry on top for Oklahoma if you do land Zadavian Sims and get the commitment as soon as Saturday. So some interesting stuff out there in the recruiting sphere to stay tuned with. We'll have you covered right here on Locked On Sooners, one way or the other, with Zadavian Sims. We've got some 2025 news to pass along for you. Probably next week we can dive into it in detail, but a couple of commits for Oklahoma in that 2025 class. ESPN, they released their early ESPN Junior 300 list, and a couple of suitors made that list, but John Williams and myself will dive into that in full next week when we reconvene together. It'll be interesting to see where the dust settles this weekend with one Zadavian Sims. One thing you can count on for sure, that's the fit. That's the comfort. It's the versatility of Bird Dogs. I got my Bird Dog shorts recently. They are sensational. Sensational. So comfortable. They fit great. I look better. I feel better. I feel great wearing my Bird Dog shorts. And that stretchy fabric, so comfy, comfier than any of my other shorts or pants. And the versatility, you got the freedom to wear those, as just your regular pair of shorts, get around shorts, pants on the golf course. They're perfect. I mean, don't these just look like golf course shorts for you. They're perfect for that. You can wear them to a meeting, a date. They're professional enough. So Bird Dogs, you got to love them. You got to check them out. Go check them out. BirdDogs.com. That's BirdDogs.com/LockedOnCollege. And when you enter promo code LockedOnCollege, they'll throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti style tumbler with every single order. Joined now by Chris Plank, the voice of Sooner Softball. You can hear him alongside myself every 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, on The Ref. And we welcome Chris Plank to Locked On Sooners. Plank, it is a very fun time of year. What do you make? We've got, I believe this is the fourth tournament in a row that Oklahoma's the number one overall seed. Just amazing. But if that's not correct, we know that they are the number one overall seed in this tournament, and they will welcome in Cal in Missouri and Hofstra to the Norman Regional. Plank, first off, thanks for joining us. Good evening to you. What do you make of the Norman Regional?
Thanks for having me, Josh. It's kind of cool because we talk every day from 9 to noon on the ref. So when we get to hang out on Locked On, I'm all about it. And I appreciate the work you and John do. I watch all the time. It's challenging. But the more I dig into this Norman Regional, the more I'm just miffed by the selection committee's process. Not in anything that, you know, sent Missouri or Cal here, but just, do you know how many SEC series Missouri won this year? They won one, and it was their final series of the season, and it was against Arkansas. And it's, I mean, they didn't, I'm perplexed by some of the decisions that are made that even landed as some teams that are in. And I know, listen, the SEC is much tougher than some of the mid-majors, but, you know, Cal, I think it was two series that they won and only one over a team with a winning record. No team probably benefited more from a conference win than Cal did over UCLA. So I'm a little bit miffed by both of the teams and their strengths. We had Aaron Miller on our show today, and Aaron said that, you know, Kenny Gajewski, whenever he saw that Missouri was coming to Oklahoma, he breathed a sigh of relief. And I'm like, you got Wichita State, bro, and they beat you twice. You know, you beat Missouri. I don't know why you're breathing a sigh of relief over not getting Missouri when it's a team you actually beat. But it's three good teams, right? Hofstra did a great job. You know, you coming from behind in the way that they won their conference tournament is pretty cool. Oklahoma's played them twice. They actually have a 1-1 mark against them. They lost in like 1996 in the pre-Patty era to Hofstra and then beat them in 2019. So there's a very small bit of history with Hofstra, but I'm really intrigued to see who comes out between Cal and Missouri, because you couldn't have two more similar teams from a Power Five conference that, they play tight with teams. They've beaten some good teams, but they've also been blown out and run ruled by teams where you're like, what the heck happened here? So, I think it's a great challenge for Oklahoma. I think you and I were looking at a statistical analysis today that had this as what the eighth or ninth toughest regional as it, you know, pertains to the three teams that are there. So I think it's a good challenge for Oklahoma. It's one they should take care of, but, you know, it's a sign of the future. You're going to see a lot of Missouri when you get into the SEC, I think. And, you know, it's an old-time rivalry, too, from back in the Big 12 days. But Missouri's been here in the postseason before, and Oklahoma's been able to take care of business. And I like Missouri. I grew up rooting, you know, as a kid. It was either Illinois or Missouri. But it's just right now, in this instance, Josh, it's three teams that are just trying to get, you know, to a level slightly below Oklahoma. They're not even close to the level Oklahoma's on right now. So they should take care of business.
Missouri, I find fascinating because here they finish with the worst record in the SEC in the regular season, and they're comfortably in this tournament. They weren't a bubble team, Plank. What do you make of that?
I don't know. Here's two things that I feel like, and I'll reference our show a lot because we talk about this a lot on our show, 9 to noon on the ref. We had Eric Lopez on Tuesday when you were moving. Wait, Wednesday when you were moving. And then we also had JT on. And I feel like my understanding of the RPI, or now suddenly what's become the adjusted RPI, it's a very antiquated conversation. There is not a one-size-fits-all for every sport, which is why basketball has gone to its net rankings, right? College basketball uses the net rankings. Now, women's basketball, I don't think they quite use it yet, but they use like a version of it, right? They have quad one wins that matter and stuff like that. But it's time to get a little bit more analytical, and I can't believe I'm saying that as someone who's always pushed back against computer rankings. But there are so many other tools that are at our disposal, and I feel like we live and die by the RPI when it fits a narrative, and then we live and die by an RPI whenever it doesn't. You know, I'm not going to start the Alabama conversation here, but I still don't know how they're a five, but yet in that same vein, Stanford is comfortably at four in the RPI and they dropped them to nine. So I feel like there's more tools at the disposal of college softball and the selection committee that can be geared towards diamond sports, can be geared towards softball. And I hope we start seeing it be used a little bit more. But yeah, to me, I mean, I look at Missouri and I'm just like, how are they here? How are they in the tournament right now? You know, their record is just terrible. So, but it's the power of being in a Power Five conference. And they've, I guess, earned that right. So it's head-scratching to me, but I'm hoping to learn a little bit more. And I hope in that the selection committee continues to use more tools at their disposal.
Well, and I know we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this today, but I think it's just one more illustration plank of the type of conference that Oklahoma in softball is about to be joining in the SEC, to where you could be in that position and still get into the tournament. It's kind of crazy. So with everything that Oklahoma has done that's just remarkable, can you put 43 wins into perspective for us here as the postseason starts, 43 straight?
Man, I don't – you know, and honestly, you look back and there might be two games in there that you look back and you're like, oof. That was close. There was the Texas Saturday game when they went to the seventh inning, but they were only down, what, you know, a run, two runs. You go to the seventh inning against Oklahoma State on the road, but again, you're only down two runs. So I just – every year I think they can't top the year before they do it. And so obviously this year doesn't top last year until they win the title. But I'm always a nervous Nelly fan. You know, I love the confidence of – Sooner Nation on Twitter, you know this, you're around me enough. I'm always worried about, oh my gosh, what happens if X player has a night off or B player has, Y player has a day off or whatever. And this team in 2023, they might be the deepest team that I've seen for Oklahoma, and maybe more so in the pitching staff than anywhere else. You know, they're going three true deep in that pitching staff. And there's not a single one of those women, and I'll add Kirsten Deal to the mix now too, that you would not feel 100% confident with them going out and giving you, you know, four to five good innings. You're like, hey, I'm going to put them out there. They'll keep it. If we struggle offensively, we're going to have a 1-2 run game. You know, we're going to be fine. So I don't even – I'm in awe sometimes myself, and I get asked a lot, oh, what's their weakness? What's going to be the problem? And you know what? I'm like, injuries, you know, and even with those injuries – they have the depth to where, you know, unlike in Alabama, it's not really all on one player, or much like in Oklahoma State, you know, where there's a little bit more pitching depth. It's not all on Kelly Maxwell. Cagle, if Cagle struggles for Clemson, they're done. And you know, it's the reality of it. So I'm in awe of the depth that they have. And it's jaw-dropping. You know, there's a lot of things that are going to change over the next couple of years for Sooner softball, right? Loves Field. Next year is Jada, TRA, Kinsey Hansen, Alyssa Brito, Nicole Mays last year. So it's going to be a whole new squad with Jordy going into the SEC in 2025. And by the way, because I'm sure there'll be someone in the comments, they'll play football in the SEC in 24. Baseball and softball won't be there until 25. So there's a lot of change coming. But I'm just so excited to see how they can top it, because every year when I think they can't, they do. And you're right. You know, 18, 19, didn't play it in 20, 21, 22, now 23. You know, I think 18 they were the two, but 19, 18, 21, 22, 23, they've gone in. Wait, is that right? Yeah, 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, they've gone in at the very least a top two or three seed, if not number one in four of those five. So every year you think, all right, this is where it's going to be a struggle. They find a way. So I'm really excited to see what that way is like for the future, because I have a hard time putting into words what I see year in and year out, game in and game out, day in and day out.
The description that I used with you on the radio side and here is, I'm surprised that I'm no longer surprised, but I'm still surprised.
Right.
It's just amazing.
You're not surprised, yet you are surprised, yet in that same vein, you're kind of surprised that you're not surprised, right? It's this never-ending cycle. And, you know, I get it. Everyone, the softball fan base is growing, and it's growing rapidly, and it's really cool to see. But you're not always going to be the pick. You're not always going to be everyone's darling because you're that good. But I'm just, and I love what they've become, and I love what they're building, and I love how fun it is to follow them year in and year out. They're really good.
Chris Plank hanging out with us, obviously my co-host on the Ref Radio Network, or I'm his co-host on the Ref Radio Network, 9 to noon, joining us here on Locked On Sooners, the voice of Sooners softball.
How is Missouri 38th in the RPI? I mean, this is – okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I hadn't looked at the RPI numbers. That's what I've been sitting here doing on my phone. Missouri is somehow 38th in the RPI, and somehow in this, Cal is even higher. I mean, this RPI – it's time to get away from the RPI, people. All right, I'm sorry, Josh. Go ahead. I apologize. And I'm
officially campaigning for the selection committee itself to no longer be the selection committee. Just let D1 softball and a couple other of these outlets put their minds together and put the bracket together themselves. That's what I'm officially campaigning for, Plank.
We overcomplicate these processes, and I don't know why. I love college baseball, right? But I haven't really followed college baseball this year. Reason I bring this up, a lot of the people that are on the softball selection committee, they love college softball, but they haven't really followed it. You know, being on the college softball selection committee is another check on the resume while you're moving up the quote-unquote corporate ladder. And, I mean, if college baseball's powers that be were to call me and say, we want you on our selection committee, I'd be like, thanks, I haven't followed it like I should. I don't think that matters to a lot of people on the softball selection committee. I really don't. And I used to think they moved away from that a little bit, but I still feel like for a lot of people, it's a title. You know, I feel like if you're on a selection committee while you don't get paid 9 to 5 like wages for it, you got to pay attention. So I don't, it's just hopefully change is coming, and that 1 to 32 ranking for the future might be a good sign of it.
So something you touched on earlier, the staff that Oklahoma has, I'll let you, and I know you might not have these statistics right in front of you, Plank, but you shared something that's interesting on the radio side. Maybe you can just ballpark it for us. Jordy Ball out of the bullpen, out in relief. What type of weapon is that for Oklahoma? I mean, obviously she's dynamite in the circle if you start her, but does Oklahoma have, quote-unquote, a secret relief weapon that's not so secret, but it's not what you expect maybe from Jordy Ball, but she's been outstanding when called upon in that area?
18 and a third innings. I kept my phone, my message. 18 and a third innings in relief. 23 strikeouts. Just 6 hits. No earned runs. None. So, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, I think Jordy, and she's incredible as a starter. You know, it's like wild. She's probably your ace, but yet she's great out of the pen. You feel like, and I don't know how you feel, Josh, when you watch it, or, you know, the listeners of and viewers of Locked On, but I just feel like when she comes out of the pen, if you could have like an intro song, you would have, I mean, like Hell's Bells, you know, Inner Sandman, you know, Wild Thing, whatever it is, you know, the trumpet song, whatever. It's just when she walks out, you're like, oh, okay, here we go. Because you just, there's a little bit of a different swagger about her when she comes out of the pen. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is. We played a series earlier this year in Oklahoma City, and she came in like for the final 2 outs. And they played the Tommy trumpet song, whatever, when she came out. And I don't know if it was on purpose or if it was just, hey, they were playing a song. And it literally had that feel like, all right, here comes Eck. Here comes Mariano. Here comes Eric Gagne for us Dodger fans. It's right. She's coming in to shut this S down. And that's just kind of what it's been when she comes in. And, man, I think what's the term? She's a boss. She is her. When she comes out of the pen, man, it is like a different level of energy. So it'll be interesting to see how Coach Gasso uses that during the postseason. You know, you got a lot more opportunities for matchups. With Deal showing what she's had, you know, you're not afraid to burn her for a couple of batters. If, you know, Jordy's rolling, it's like, hey, we got 2 lefties. Let's bring in Kirsten here and see what she can do with these 2 lefties. Nicole May hasn't just thrown. I mean, Nicole May hasn't thrown a lot during the home stretch of the season. So she's fresh and ready to go. So I'm really, really excited to see what that, you know, there's not a you know, people that sit there and talk about, oh, you know, they got a Friday, Saturday, Sunday starter. No, they don't. You know, it's just, it's worked out that way where sometimes on Friday it's Ball, sometimes on Saturday it's May, sometimes on Sunday it's Straka, sometimes on Friday it's Straka. There's no rhyme or reason to it, you know? Coach seems to like to have Jordy set the tone, and we all buy that. And then in the Big 12 tournament, they go, Alex Straka to set the tone against Iowa State. You know what? Nicole May pitches the championship game. So I love the versatility that they have in all three of these starters, and it's just – it's fun to see what Jordy has become coming out of the pen.
Two more, if I may, Plank.
Go ahead.
The lineup for Oklahoma. I know we've talked a lot about the pitching staff. This lineup for Oklahoma, how does – you know, not that you have to totally compare and contrast, but just what about this lineup stands out to you? And then as it compares, yeah, I guess a little bit to previous lineups. Like last year you had the home run queen. I mean, how does this lineup stack up versus what Oklahoma entered the postseason with a year ago?
It's more versatile. I think that you have – it's kind of wild because – you know, like six of the nine hitters are the same from last year. I would say that it's fun in trying to figure out how Coach and JT are approaching how they use their lineup because it's constantly changing and evolving, right? You might feel good that Jordy's going to lead off. I'm sorry, Jade is going to lead off and T.R.A. Jennings is going to bat second. And you know, Haley Lee is going to bat third, or Sid Sanders is going to bat third, and then Haley Lee or Kinzie Hansen is going to bat fourth. But then that could change from game to game. So I think it's more diverse. I'll tell you the biggest difference, and this is a small one, but what Riley Boone has started to develop in the nine hole is really special. She has – I haven't checked the numbers recently, but, I mean, you and John can correct this. I want to say she's almost – tripled the number of walks that she's had in her career combined heading into this year. She had doubled them by the, you know, the midpoint of the season. So she's being a lot more patient at the plate. That's turning the lineup over. She's hitting the ball hard. So I think what Riley Boone has developed into in the nine hole, that's become a spot now that, all right, you're not looking down the bench and saying, all right, who can we get in here to give us some punch or get on base? Riley's that spark plug. It's then the depth of what you have in right field or what you use to get that extra bat in the lineup. You know, Haley Lee's been a lockdown as the DP, but, you know, you've seen Alina Torres, you've seen Jocelyn Erickson, you've seen Sophia Nugent, you've seen Avery Hodge, you've seen Quincy Lilio all play out in right field, and they've all, you know, at times shown, dang, they need to be in this lineup. So I just feel like it's a little bit deeper. It's a little bit more diverse. But every one through nine, every person that steps to the plate can hit a home run. And I don't know any other team in college softball that can say that. So it's really the power and the versatility. You know, you have, you know, two or three, well, Jada, Sid, Riley, and just people that could go up there and Sid not as much, maybe probably not the best example, but where they can get a home run, they can slap into the gap. They can lay down a bunt. You know, it's just you've got so many, you know, multi-tool players in this lineup. It's really fun to see.
I can't believe this is getting started tomorrow. It's so exciting and just flies by as always. Last question, Plank. The regional that Oklahoma's paired up with here, Clemson-Auburn, we think would advance on, but hypothetically, what do you think about that? And then just in closing, the bracket as a whole. I know you mentioned Alabama a little bit, but what else sticks out about this bracket?
It's I thought last year was one of the best brackets the committee ever put together. I thought last year was balanced and they hit it on the head. I feel like this year they're like, we got last year, let's screw up this year. But with that in mind, you know, Oklahoma, a lot of people had Clemson around 16 around this area. So Valerie Cagle's a beast, but you know, she's it for Clemson. I would say that I would not be shocked if it's not Clemson. In other words, if it's Auburn or Cal State Fullerton that Oklahoma sees in the super regional, pending everyone surviving. But I think we're set up for some hosts that are going to have to play two games on Sunday. Florida State. I mean, that is a tough regional. UCLA, that is a tough regional. You know, San Diego State is really good. Liberty is really good. Grand Canyon is really good. I don't know. They did no favors to UCLA, nor did they do for Florida State. Tennessee, that is a tough regional with the way that Indiana can mash. So, you know, you just look at 1 through 4, and it's almost as if, all right, we're going to give you the hardest fight, you know, and let's see how you guys, let's see how this plays out. So that's fascinating to me. I don't think you'll see as many upsets as we saw last year, but I do think you'll see a lot of two-game Sundays. Also, you know, weather's going to be fascinating, right? We might have to deal with it tomorrow here as we tape this, you know, in Oklahoma with the weather forecast. I've been told that it'll be pushed back as opposed to being pushed up. So in other words, you know, I wouldn't worry about suddenly getting an alert tonight. It's like games first pitch at 11 a.m. be there. I think it would be more like we're going to play at 5 or 6 as opposed to 4. So we'll see how that pans out. But, you know, there's a tough forecast in Tuscaloosa. There's a tough forecast in Baton Rouge. There's a tough forecast in Tallahassee. So it's going to be real interesting to see how weather ends up impacting not just getting these games in, but also then how coaches use their pitching staff. And, say, Tuscaloosa with the Montana Fouts, maybe it helps them out to give her a little bit more rest. So it'll be fascinating. Fascinating, Josh, to see how this pans out. But I think it's going to be one of the more competitive tournaments that we've had, you know, about 2 through 16 in their regionals.
Meanwhile, Oklahoma's got this great chance to make history in this tournament. Should be so much fun. 94.7 The Ref, 9 to noon, where you can hear Plank and myself every Monday through Friday. Plank, the radio calls. Where can folks find you as this postseason push begins for the Sooners?
Yeah, you can find us on the franchise, 1560 and 107.7 Terrestrial. Their app has it too. I would encourage you, if, you know, there's a lot of different ways, and sometimes different apps work better with different phones. So franchise app, Varsity Sports Network app is always a good one to have. And, you know, as we sit here tonight, Josh, taping this, we'll be on the air at 3:45 for a 4 o'clock first pitch for Oklahoma to get things going in the Norman Regional. And who knows what chaos has happened by the time we get to that point.
Should be fun. Plank, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And we'll do it again soon, but not too soon, because you got a postseason to take care of.
You got a postseason. Thanks, Josh.
Okay. See you, man. For Plank, I'm Josh. That's it for Locked On Sooners. So long, everybody.